Two locks and a cox.
From Devon's Radio X with Exeter Chiefs.
The next match against Bath is on Saturday the 20th of April. Book your tickets today at tickethub.exeterchiefs.co.uk.
Welcome to episode 34 of Two Locks and a Cox with myself, Chris Bentley, Dame of the Realm, Sarah Cox, and the Austin Healey Fan Club Chairman, Ian Dunstan. This week, we have special guest Dave Sylvester joining us, and that's for the off the field. But on the field, Chiefs lose, Women's Six Nations, a USA win, and in the bin, referees' challenges and the law variations. Ka-chow.
Two Locks and a Cox.
From Devon's Radio X.
So first and foremost, can we welcome Dave Sylvester? I'm really pleased to have him in the room.
No, firstly, can we welcome you back? We did all right last week without you.
Yeah, sorry, I was hosting Meet the Funders with Dave Otley in Plymouth.
There you
150
go.
People in a room. Most
Look,
of them
here he goes. No one cares where you were.
How exciting.
You just weren't here. Sorry, now over to Dave.
Who's this Dave Sylvester bloke you're talking about?
Yeah. Dave Sylvester, so former Royal Marines Commando, head of strength and conditioning for Exeter Chiefs, head of strength and conditioning for England, and now head of strength and conditioning for the Fiji Rugby Union. Well, is that correct?
Nearly. Was never head of conditioning for Exeter, just worked with Paddy Anson as one of the strength and conditioning coaches, but thank you very much for the promotion. Yeah. It was very nice.
I've known you a very long time, and I've only ever known you as Tweets.
That's correct. It's only my mother knows me as David. Mother or wife, I only get called that when I'm done something wrong, which
exactly.
is quite regularly.
Okay, so we're going to go in with Tweety Pie, but we're going to do on the field first. Everybody happy with that?
Oh, crack on.
Yeah, okay. So Chiefs got beat by Sale 41-5.
The end. I think that's it.
No, so,
there's
so
nothing more.
I've written about it in the paper this week. Very quickly, there was a pivotal moment. Josh Hodge goes up, two hands for an intercept. He takes it, 17-7.
Oh, God, I knew this was bloody going to come
Completely different
up.
Tone of the game. But instead, he gets sin-binned. 3 minutes earlier, Manu Tuilagi's gone one-handed, knocked it down, penalty.
No, wrong way round. 3 minutes into the game, Manu smashes the ball down.
Yeah.
We're right at the beginning of a game. It was pretty obvious. He probably looks back and wish he'd binned him at that stage. But he goes, no, it's fine. Off we go. We're just at the beginning of a game. And there's loads of pressure on this referee to do it. He then makes loads of other odd decisions or close decisions for Chiefs.
Right.
So there was one where...
Does he?
Yeah, he does, yeah. Ben Curry comes straight round the side. Now, he must have thought that ball was out, but the ball was still inside his foot. So there were about four or five close decisions. Now, they were all 50-50s. They just went against us. Now, I'm biased, all right? Slightly. But like that. And then we get through, and Chiefs just start really to annoy him. So by now, he's really fed up with Chiefs because they're constantly giving away stupid penalties, coming over, taking out the nine before he lifted the ball, stuff like that.
Right.
Josh Hodge then goes for an intercept, hands up, looks like he could catch it from everyone else, doesn't, knocks it forward. Referee is so fed up with Chiefs, TMO goes, yeah, no, bin him.
Right.
Done.
Okay.
Ta-da! Right. And that is how you referee a premiership game, apparently.
Well, no, the big thing from mine was a pivotal moment, because if Hodgie gets that, it's 17-7. Instead, he's in the bin. Say it. Now, Baxter said at the end, and the truth is, Chiefs weren't up to much. It was a crap game from the Chiefs. And I'd rather just draw a line under it and move on if everyone's happy.
Yeah, it was a bit stagnant, wasn't it?
I think you need to go into why you have a bad performance. So, Tweets, you know, when you have a bad performance like that, aside in your experience, then the following week, what do you do with them?
Yeah, interesting question. Thank you very much.
Yeah, there you go. Into the deep end.
It looked to me in that game, though, that as the last second two weekends of Premiership has shown, that teams have flip flopped from either side. You look at the Saracens game against Quins the very first weekend when they came back, and then the game they played against away. They played against away against Northampton at the weekend. Completely different. So there's a big mindset thing, and I think Rob's been speaking in the papers about it this week about what's the hardest thing for a team to keep them going, what's the hardest thing to generate, to work against, and that's that mentality, that mindset. You know what I mean? Sale, I believe, are quite a bogey team for the Chiefs, in the fact going away to them has been a hard grind for them before, some of the results, the way that's actually gone, to go up there, travel away. There's all factors that have come into play.
Sale were also, if they lost that game, they're out the playoff mix. Like they had to win that game.
Yeah.
Whereas Chiefs,
that table at the moment is...
There's eight teams.
It's chaos.
Eight teams have got exactly the same played and lost one.
Yeah, and then you can go from being eighth to like second
with a win.
Yeah, Unbelievable. That's tight.
The only other comment I'd like to make, Ross Vincent deserves all the awards available. He broke his nose about 3 minutes in, and they were patching him up and doing what for, and he kept going. Fair play.
Yeah, well, that looked like it hurt as well.
Although, next week we've got Sam Peters, author of Concussed, on. I would have said that Dafydd Jenkins and Ross Vincent both needed HIAs in the first 5 minutes.
Really?
Yeah. We'll talk about that later. So that's the Chiefs game. We're going to draw a line on that. Everyone happy with that?
Yeah.
Moving on. Women's Six Nations.
Hang on. We haven't even gone into the second half yet.
Oh, go on then. What do you want?
Nothing. God. We're done. I'm done with it.
Look, it was a crap game. The boys didn't play very well. Baxter's got the best ammunition available to get them riled up for Bath this week.
What's that?
Which is the European round of 16. So
knockout rugby.
Knockout rugby.
Yeah, I see what you mean.
Bring your blue. I'm going to wear my blue Timberland jumper. Because I'm in the prawn sandwiches.
I like that marketing campaign. Bring your blue. It's quite cool. I like that.
Yeah, I'd like to say it was fully original, but it started with Bath talking about bring the red. And then the Chiefs went, oh, actually, we can do better than that because we can bring the blue.
Yeah, and?
There's no such thing as original idea now. You just got to take it on.
Yeah.
So Six Nations was a terrible referee for Scotland versus France live on BBC.
Thanks, Chris.
Sorry,
I don't think that was required.
To be honest with you, both my children went, Coxie's on the telly! And they're running around the house so excited.
So excited because normally she's raiding your fridge for something to eat.
Yeah, yeah. And never leaving. But
well, that's another story.
So 5-15 in that one. Ireland still battling. They haven't won in the Six Nations since 2022. They lost to Italy 21-27.
But they came back in the second half.
They did.
It got real tight.
But I'm in the Cleaner Maloney fan club. They should have had Cleaner. They'd have won then. Can I say that? And then England-Wales. England 46, Wales 10. In front of the biggest crowd outside of Twickenham, 19,703.
Yeah, how good is that?
That was a stroke of genius, though, wasn't it? Playing England-Wales just over the bridge, which is now free.
That's exactly why they did it.
That's what I mean. It was a stroke of genius choosing that choice to get a really big crowd to get that all going.
Well, they don't choose normally the venue's bid. They sort of say to the RFU, we want to host this game.
Not quite.
That's the French model. So the French model, they put it all in an envelope, I think. Chuck it all around and say, right, okay, these are the ones that have come out.
Okay.
I used to do that to pay my bills in the business in the early days.
Oh, wow,
used
really?
To just put the suppliers' names in the envelope.
You don't pay them anymore.
Doesn't pay anyone now.
We're traders. We're a little bit bigger, so actually I don't get to do any of that. But you used to put their name in a hat.
Someone to do it for me.
And draw them out. And then the suppliers used to say, I've not been paid. I was like, if you're rude, your name won't even go into the hat.
Wow. Okay, wow. So I was impressed with the Welsh first 20 minutes. And I think that England... I've got to enjoy probably this year where they'll win the Grand Slam. But the Welsh, for the first 20, ran the game, played some really good patterns, but just didn't have the physicality to deal with England. And I think that as their professionalism starts to kick in, it's not like you're professional now, you can compete with the Red Roses.
That's the thing, isn't it? Yeah.
I think that in a year or two's time, if the money keeps flowing through the women's game, then England are not going to have it all their own way as they do at the moment.
No, it's really interesting you talk about that because I think there is an expectation at the moment that once you turn professional, oh, you should be really good at this. But it takes, I reckon it'll take about 5 years to get it really off the ground, really working properly.
Yeah.
And Dave, you're probably seeing that now.
This is going to segue lovely into Fiji. I'm gutted. Just very quickly, the Americans beat the South Africans 38-17. We had Hope Rogers, Rachel Johnson, Olivia Ortiz and Gabby Cantona all playing fastest try in the history of women's rugby. It was like 12 seconds kickoff. The Americans caught it and scored.
Ta-da!
That's the research done. But carry on with that question and we can segue nicely into off the field.
And then we segue nicely into off the field. Now, you must be finding that with going from a full-time, sort of very well-funded programme, I guess, in England and the Premiership into a very different type of environment, I guess, like where the money isn't the money isn't there. It's not the same as England, is it?
No, the finances are far different.
Yeah.
They just are. And it's how they're, from a Fijian point of view, how the system works coming through. And then it's almost, they have to have a couple of years to showcase their talents and then be picked up and then taken on into a more professional environment, i.e. the Northern Hemisphere. Now, with the set of the Drewer, they have that beforehand. So they're starting earlier and earlier. They have a newer... professional programme that they're in and running. It's that things like nutrition, sleep, things that are just taken for granted are unknown about. They're now getting that far, far earlier, and it's trying to drip feed it down even further down the academy levels that they do hold in Fiji so that comes forward. But you're 100% correct in that Just going professional doesn't make you good. In 24 hours, nothing can physically from that. It's actually embracing it and doing it constantly, professionally, and doing it well.
It's that age-old saying, isn't it? The consistency. You just go back to consistency and then things will start clicking.
100%. And that's probably stems from some of the first point about the games where they've gone over. What's changed? What's changed in the consistency? Is it just how hard you do it? What your intent is? And that's a really difficult, unmeasurable quantity to somebody's training, somebody's what they're doing. And you have to be able to see that. And that's the art of coaching rather than just the pure science, which people can go down.
And what is your schedule looking like now? So obviously, again, just to give a comparison.
You've gone to the end, Coxie. I want to go to the beginning.
Oh, sorry. I'm really intrigued. Sorry.
Okay,
rewind then.
So hello, welcome,
I'm
Dave
fascinated.
Sylvester. We've looked at all the
tweets.
Sorry, Tweety Pie. We've been through where you're at now, but I want to get some origins. How you got into physical conditioning? How you've gone to rugby, especially, and go. Floor's yours.
Can we start with like a blind date? What's your name and where'd you come from?
That's pretty obvious. Northern, isn't he? He's more northern than me.
Well, I could go proper northern if you like. But my wife did say, try and put on a posh voice. So
that is your posh voice.
If I flip in and out, then there you go. You know where I am. I did 23 years in the Royal Marines as a physical training, or specialised as a physical training instructor. Part of that was also becoming a rehab specialist. And as I came towards the end of my time in the Marines, I was very lucky. In fact, step back. 1999, we did some work for the 1999 England team. One of the first times when pro
sports
teams...
Clive Woodward brought them to CTC, wasn't it? Yeah,
when the first time that sort of national teams and then sports teams started to come into use military, not doctrine, but military experiences to team build, to drive and to go forward. Did some work there and was very lucky to work with a guy who then moved on to start working for the RFU. Fast forward to 2007, and England were again going to come to the Royal Marines to do some work with them there. The conditioner at the time said he was struggling to get somebody else to help him, and he had a big squad. They brought in 42 players plus, which is a large squad for a World Cup starting point. So the conditioner asked the gentleman who still worked at the RFU, do you know anybody in the Marines who could be suitable? He said, yes, I do. And I met the conditioner and we chatted for a while, and he said, did you think I would be able to get the time to do it? I went and spoke to my commanding officer and he said, yep, off you go. So I went and did the training camp. We trained in Bath and played. They said, that was my first, I was just going to do the training camp and that would have been it. Mm-hmm. But they said, no, could you stay on and do the World Cup? I went back to the commanding officer and I said, I'd give up leave and anything, can I go? He said, yep. Very,
did it cost
very
you a tracksuit or something?
It did indeed, yeah, yeah. There's a lot of stash flying around at that time. Stash is currency, as we all know.
100%. That's the whole reason I got into refereeing.
It's the most important thing. As you get a bit older, it's not as... But when you're first in, oh my God, the stash. Yeah, yeah. So carry on, sorry.
It's all right. And so from there, I went into the World Cup and obviously knows the history behind that. Got to the final, probably...
Mark Coito and a touch judge.
Indeed. What could
Stop
be?
Picking on the refs.
We was robbed.
So went from there, then came back and started doing work with the Chiefs. Knew Paddy Anson, who asked me to come in, ex-Royal Marine as well. And so went into the Chiefs.
Former,
yes. But then was been able to work as... worked the Marines, and as I was coming to my time, they were very accommodating. So I did worked with the Marines in the morning.
Exeter
Chiefs in the morning.
So you'd be going back to the Commando Training Centre and working
in the afternoon. So I'd do Exeter in the morning. I'd go back to the Marines and work afternoons into the evenings to make sure the work was covered. And occasionally I would be allowed to go and do some work with England's camp and work my way through that. One tour of Afghanistan in between just to keep you on your toes and keep you moving. And then when I left in 2010, was very lucky to be asked to do a contract with Exeter and also with England so I could work simultaneously. I went away for the England camp, but not I would be back working with Exeter. We did the promotion and then in 2011 was asked to come full-time with England as a strength and conditioning coach.
I remember that well because Paddy had moved on and then you were number two, so you were going to be the number one, and then you were off with England and suddenly Twigsy, steady, so there's no misprint, so Twigsy was number three and he suddenly went into the seat, and Twigsy, I retired and was joined the commercial team and was absolutely bricking it every day. Twigsy was just like number three, was not really doing much, was suddenly number one. And we were coming in first thing in the morning. We were the last ones out every day.
And
we were
hasn't he done well?
Hasn't he just?
Hey. Hasn't he just?
Like a young Padawan learner.
Yeah.
The Jedi went, I must go. You were like Obi-Wan, you just disappeared.
He was just sat in the ranks trying to work out, how do I get rid of Tweety? How do I get rid of Paddy Anson? These two bootnecks that are a little bit older than me, and all of a sudden you both disappeared, and he's like, it's my time to shine.
Yeah, but I want to get, for yourself, how did you find the movement? Because obviously there was one occasion where we did team building on Dartmoor, and Eric Nielsen was the commanding officer of the Commando Training Centre, and we were doing like escape and evasion and stuff like that. And we'd be a couple of days and we're all tired. And we had this one thing, we had to get a crash test dummy, and we had to construct a raft. No, we had to construct
words out there.
Stretcher.
A stretcher, that was the word. We had to construct a stretcher.
That really difficult word. Stretcher. What do you put bodies on?
Stick with me. We had to get him down this cliff face. Crikey. And Eric Nielsen was with my group at the time. We had Shane Kingsland prop, and he'd lost his head. Completely lost his head.
Oh, I remember.
Tied a noose around the neck of
this
crash test dummy and threw it over the edge. And Nielsen was like, what are you doing? And Keno went, well, he's dead anyway. We're just saving time. And I could see all the fuses in the commanding officer of CT's head just go, because if that was a bootneck, right, you're now getting flogged for the next 6 weeks. But you're a professional rugby player. I can't. So how did you find the transition from where you've got the soldiers that you're training to kill people and have to be absolutely on the button to professional rugby players who are getting a level of remuneration and a bit more ego?
Can I just say, there is probably one person that I would least want to be out in that position with, and it would be you, Chris Bentley.
I was all right on that stuff.
There is just a part of me that feels that I would commit a murder and bury you 6 feet under on Dartmoor, because you'd be the most annoying human being known to mankind.
I just used to sing. Faye and I have decided in a zombie apocalypse, he's going, Catherine's going straight away.
Yeah, he has to.
They'll come up with stupid ideas or try and save something.
Right. Or just be annoyingly loud. And you're like, you're serving no purpose. No, you're just a noise.
The thing was, you're with the Marines and you think, well, I've got to impress you. I'm going to show that I'm
cheerfulness in the face of adversity. No, and I can absolutely imagine this as well. And you're back fat going around Dartmoor. I get this.
Toss the zombie magnet. They just go.
Yeah.
Now the children are finished, Dave.
Not a problem.
The cultural difference between elite level rugby performers and elite level military performers.
I think a lot of it stems from what you actually are looking to do.
Yeah.
And it's from that 99
level. Don't touch table, love.
Sorry.
Yeah, you got go on.
As from 99 and when it went forward, and military teams or people start to come to the military more, there's a stereotypical view that military just shout at people, shout and shout, and that gets them to do it, and you keep people moving, keep people going. Well, that's half the battle, or that's not correctly true. Because what you want to do is you want to train people to do what they need to be able to do. Yeah. And you want to put them under pressure. You want to make sure that they're stressed so that you know they can operate and do the things you want them to do when the highest levels of stress that they could possibly come against. That sounds a lot to me like rugby players.
Mm-hmm.
Now, shouting at rugby players, probably you can encourage them, but you don't need to shout and do the same, have the same mentality, because they don't want to be trained killers or trained soldiers or trained Royal Marines, because that's not what they're after. But what they do need to do is be stressed, put them under positions where they then have to learn about what it's mentally like when it's hard, it's cold, and they're slightly alien to what you actually they would normally be, because you put them on a rugby field and you know you're going to be within 80-90 minutes you're going to be off the rugby field and you're going to play a game. But if you don't know how long you're playing the game for, or you don't know how long you've got to be able to do a task, or you don't know how long you're going to be going for, and it's raining, when you're going to get fed next, when you get what next, so you can just take things away, add things in, and just actually manipulate them without actually having to shout and scream and do the same thing. So it's knowing the people that you want to do and what you want to get from them, and the situation you want to put them under, that'll be the case in point. So exactly what you said there. So he's hoying him off the top of a cliff with a rope attached around his neck. Was that in the brief? If it wasn't in the brief, then is that ingenuity? Because did you say you couldn't?
Well, he's dead anyway.
You work on train hard, fight easy, don't you?
That's it.
The great one there was Sam Burgess, where he was on the SAS thing with
he was really good at that.
Yeah, he hijacked the bus.
Yeah.
Genuinely hijacked the ball.
That's ingenuity.
Isn't it ever?
That's brilliant.
They're the rules. That's the way you have to work.
When he got stuck in that tunnel as well. Oh, and they were like, we're not getting you out. Get yourself out.
Having been very fortunate to have been a county ground chief through to the Premiership and then witnessed the team win the Prem and what have you, there's a term that I've coined is cultural architects. There were people that came into the team at really important times. Paddy Anson was very important because he brought a level of professionalism through. And he also set a standard. There were simple things. He wore a vest every day one year because we were bitching about the cold. So I'm going to wear a vest. And when the ice bath came, I'll be the first man in and the last man out. So he set a standard. Paddy went to a level, but then you came in and brought, and there's no disrespect intended to Paddy, there was a personality and joviality because you used to give us dance breaks in the gym.
Was no dancing in the gym?
Yeah, Paddy was
don't
no dancing.
Don't tell Paddy that.
No, but then Dave, but then,
is
but
it
then
still
Tweet,
on you?
But then Tweet used to say, right, lads, this song's too good. Dance Amnesty, 1 minute, bang. And he'd bang it up and suddenly everyone would be going loopy having a dance around the gym.
Shut up.
Is there still a video of you and Cliffy dancing in the gym YouTube, on YouTube somewhere?
Yeah. Know how to get the best out of your guys. Know what they need at the time. Just throw the odd thing in, get them going, motivate or encourage. Before you know it, people have then stepped into one. That's the supposed, that's what I'm trying to say is.
I had a turn around and been like, Who are you?
But this was this.
You know how to flick your switch and get you do what you want to do.
He'd have given you chocolate, and then you'd have loved him.
And there was
there were
things like this that suddenly came in, and at first it was like I'm not sure about this.
Again, I've been in the gym with you. You're the most annoying human being, and then to throw that in, I'd be like, again, I'd throw a dumbbell at him.
But were you there when we did the self-motivating circuit?
Genuinely, the self-motivating circuit was one of the most difficult things I've ever done.
You have to keep quiet?
You arrive at the club, they've blacked out all the windows, they put you in the gym, they've got Gladiator on the screen, and they say, we're going to call you in threes, and you're going to come through, and when you come through, you'll do, and I'm going to pass it over to him. So you're sat in the gym, in your gym kit, and they come in at random intervals, take three of you through into the back corridor and go, right, time to go. Carry on, Dave, you tell him.
Not a problem. So the view or the idea is that a lot of the work you do is people, Chris would be a prime one, would want to know, how far do I have to go? How long do I need to go? What am I doing? So then they can get your head around it. Now, as I spoke about before, if you want to stress somebody, if you want to put them under a type of pressure, you take away a lot of the things that they are extrinsic to their motivation. Yeah. So, for example, running out in front of Sandy Park and seeing the crowd shouting and cheering is motivation. 100% it is. So we run a circuit. And the idea behind the circuit is we put four or five lanes. Each lane has the same amount of exercise, exactly the same exercises on it. You bring four people in, it's the first time they've seen it. You actually then say to them, you get a demonstration of the exercises, and they're all exercises you can keep doing. So press-ups is a muscle fatigue. You won't be able to do it.
You were in charge of me. It was honestly, I nearly cried.
And so what you do is, the brief to the guys is, you'll start working on the exercise.
So when you say, like, press-ups, is muscle fatigue, you will blow out at some point.
You can't keep doing press-ups.
The first station for us was the rower, and he goes, you've got to go flat out. So I got on the rower, and I'm, like, Olympic standard. And I was at the time. I was fast. I was putting, like, 112 splits. Like,
this means nothing to anyone. Carry on.
Bonkers splits. And he's looking at me dispassionately. And then the lactic starts to build up at, like, 200-300 metres, and I'm slowing down. He's right. That'll do, move on. I get off and I go, get back on the rower.
Because what the idea, the principle is that, and the brief, is you'll do work on an exercise until you are either working hard enough or the person who is overviewing you has said you have worked hard enough and he will move you on to the next exercise. If at any point he feels you are not working hard enough or you're trying to take a break, he will move you back an exercise. At any point you say, I can't go on, then you will be stepped out. You cannot go back in. If you argue, you'll be moved back. You'll be moved back in exercise and you'll keep going backwards until you get on the exercise.
I would be fascinated to see you do this with a women's team.
There's no music. There is no shouting. There is no encouragement. It is deathly silence in there.
Self-motivation circuit.
And there is nothing to be able to gain anything from an outside factor.
So when are you doing this? Are you doing this pre-season, in-season?
It's a pre-season. Activity. And this is no manufacturer of the system itself. It probably takes around, with 10 exercises and a right choice of exercises, it probably takes somewhere in the region of between 14 and 18 minutes to do it. And it's four people. But there are all type of things, and I'm sure
Chris... We had Sean Tomes, me, James Hanks, Tom Skelds, Sean Tomes was huge and he wasn't in the best condition. And they moved him on about five stations. So I'm like, hang on, I'm Olympic rowing here. I am setting the standard beyond the, honestly, the British Olympic Association are going to go, Chris, you're no good at rugby, come and row, which Rob Baxter once said to me. But I'm losing my head. I'm like, I am literally, he cannot row as fast as me.
Which is the beauty of it, because you have one person, I'm overseeing Chris. So I'm not looking at anybody else. And so it's my perception of what he needs to do.
Yeah.
And so somebody else might have a slightly different perception.
We had an over-under. They had a rope. You had to jump the rope and go under. And honestly, when you get up from under the rope, hands on knees, just have a breath, go back. What? Go back again. And they'd move you back like four stations.
Oh, I would pay very good money for you to see you do this to within a female and female setup.
We had it was Paul McKenzie had palpitations because he absolutely ended himself. He was like feet above his head. He'd emptied the tank.
That's
entirely.
Amazing.
And we did have a player say, "I can't go on, step out." That was it. There's
nothing.
That's the idea, is that there is no emotion involved with it. There's nothing that the player can then.
So you wouldn't get like a repercussion.
No, step out. And we had all the coaches watch.
I wouldn't even start.
Because you're a pile of alphas. You're in pre-season. All want to impress.
Yeah.
And you're going off, and they're all and they tweets been like having fun and jovial. Like, this is the reef. This is what you're going to do. You can move on to the next station. Move on to the next station. You've shown emotion. Move backwards. Move backwards again. But that's what you're getting.
You would have struggled with that, Chris, because your psyche is very much
I'd have lost it.
I'd have lost it and stepped away, thinking that you're purposely being a bit of a.
So there you go. So then you get to the end. We talk to the players and ask them for those exactly that, the feedback. What did you feel? What did you think? Where did you go? And there's a lot of self. Reflection about how you actually have centred it. So, example, that one there, I'm fitter than him and he's got four in front of me.
Yeah.
So, therefore, there's a thing about that. So, if he knocks a ball on, what am I doing it for? Do you know what I mean? There's a whole trade-off behind it. It stems from what we used with the injured recruits who were coming back to training, who were long-term injured, in that their motivation was starting to wane. And so you had to put them in a pressure situation, which was hard mentally. Physically it is, without shadow of a doubt. But the physical side isn't the real thing about it. It's the mental side of it, because you don't know how long you're going for. And that was always the issue and the problem. And it's what we stem back to before about what do you want to get the best out of people, is that how many times are we going to have to carry the ball? How many times am I going to have to run back? Yeah. What am I going to have to do? It doesn't matter. It's just get up and go, get up and go, get up and go.
This is why I'm such a fan of the Marines as conditioners, because we went from a real jovial, stupid team. We were tough, but we weren't properly hard. And through the course of a few years, this hardness came in. But there was a smile on your face, because we used to come in of a morning and you'd have like military bands playing and you'd be, welcome to my gym, gentlemen, let's get ready. And we just had this. So Paddy made brought the toughness and the professionalism, and suddenly Tweets brought the jovial, because it was like, if you do the job, you're sound, you can crack on.
See, no, I what I find fascinating is the thought process behind this, because I'm going to be honest with you, and this is probably very similar to the perception that people have about referees as well, is you only see a very like small snapshot of something and none of the thought process behind it. And I thought the Marine side of stuff, you get shouted at all the time, you get run round at Dartmoor or across Woodbury for no good reason other than I just want to see you suffer. But then to hear that, I would be fascinated for you to come into the referees and do something like that and see what the reaction would be. Because I think it's very different going from a team environment where you're playing. We've got this really weird paradox in refereeing that you all want to be in the middle, but there'll be two of you on the side that have to support the person in the middle. And so, you get that knock-on ball type of thing that you'd get in a team where you slap each other's head and you crack on again. We don't have that as referees. If you make a mistake, you're sort of on your own, really. So I would be fascinated to see if you could unlock some of what the...
Unfortunately, your boat sailed. He's off to Fiji to do it. So if you join the Fiji PGMOT, they've probably got something somewhere.
I've heard they need a referee.
They do. So, they definitely do.
So we're with Chiefs. And you're with the Chiefs for a period of time, but then you're moving more towards England. Now, England is almost sporadic. You come together for a period, you go away. Mm, yeah. So there's a difference there.
How do you get the best out of people then when you don't see them?
So I think a lot of that then stems to a big part of it is one thing I've learned, and when you reflect on each of them, is time. Time is everything. Mm. Time is the most valuable thing in the universe, because you'll never have enough of it. And it's what then? So we've got this time. How are we going to use it to our best of our possibility? And there, from there, you've got to identify what's important. That's the important thing that's going to, we think, will win us test matches. And therefore, that's what we'll focus on. And there's so much you can possibly do and pick out from that if you overload people, because they're coming together, and sometimes when you listen to people talk about it, then this should be better. They get 2 weeks prepping. I know England get 2 weeks prep before the first test match of the Six Nations. Then it's a week. Then it's, you know, time off and so on. That's probably, there isn't enough to really drill down and get it, because you're changing a whole lot of different philosophies from different teams, the way the boys come together, and just driving them forward. So it's identifying what's the important thing, what have you got, how much time have you got to do it, and what do we need to get to done by that. That's how you drive it forward. And that's where you go from there. And within that, if you can create a good culture, a good environment, and that includes bringing the players in, staff, coaches, and everyone's embodied on that, that then grows itself. And it's like feeding logs onto the fire, that then it starts to grow and build from that phase there. Make it some an environment somebody wants to come into and learn.
You had, what, 6 months, was it, with Fiji before World Cup?
No. We had, and this is the interesting thing about them, is the fact that we had nine weeks together. From the 1st of July, Fiji came together as a group. That was the first time. The problem being beyond that, before that, was that you had, what is it, you have this, you're playing this competition down in the
super
south.
Super Rugby.
Super Rugby, that's the point I'm looking for. Top 14, Pro D2, URC and Premiership.
We have to say Pro D2.
Oh, Pro D2.
Pro D2.
Pro D2. Second division of the French. So yeah. you've got at least five different leagues ongoing. They all finished at different times. And so therefore, you look at the URC, the players we had in Edinburgh, they finished in April. We didn't come together till the 1st of July. You had the guys in the top 14 finished 2 weeks before the final. La Rochelle was there. So you had such a disparity of people that programmes were sent out, visiting them, lots of travel time. Together, as a group, from the first set, was the 1st of July. So we had 9 weeks before we started into the competition.
Goodness me.
And the Fijian sort of mentality, a lot of the time, when the guys went away from Chiefs in the off-season, they used to come back like 2 stone heavier, didn't they?
Now, there's an interesting conundrum there. So it's understanding, again, go back to that point, is understand your people, understand what they need to do, and understand what's going to be their Achilles heel. So yes, if you look at a burger, you're going to put 4 kilos on, so stay away from them. But also, it was laying out the plan very early on. So beginning of the year, we actually spoke, I went, visited all of the guys who were potentially going to be in the squad, and I then briefed them on what we were going to do, and so they knew what was coming. And then I gave them a plan for themselves to what they needed to do, working with their clubs, S&Cs. And we have no agreement, like a lot of other international agencies do, in that I can go in and I have to ask them, are they happy with that? And it's got to fit with their club programme. So it was identifying that, and we're back round to what's the one important thing. So come in at this weight, you'll be good. I think you'll be good to go for that. Come in at this fitness, you'll be good. You know, this strength, this will be good. And it's just that one thing you can bring in.
Was the culture shock a challenge with the Fijians? Because, I mean, there's the famous story with Seru Rambini when he was at Leicester, and the coach said, you're feeling all right? No, I'm a bit ill. Then go home and come back when you're feeling better. And 2 weeks later, he hadn't turned up. Where have you? Oh, you said, go home, coach. I've gone home. He's back in the islands. Now, in England, you've got real... We weren't robots, but we were really keen on the S&C. Get me in the gym. I want to lift weights. Yeah. What's your bench press? What can you squat? What can you clean? Whereas the Polynesian, predominantly the Fijians, like, they're a bit more laid back.
Yep. Yeah, but that's part of the interesting challenge about how you get what you need from these guys. Some of them, they're more laid back. So you cue into that humour. Yep. You cue into that enjoyment factor. You make things a game. Mm. You start with a game with them, the Fijians, and they're laughing and giggling like little kids, then you know you're onto a winner.
Yeah.
And My favourite
favourite thing I saw was you marching them up this muddy hill.
Oh, yeah, tell us about that hill.
Hang on. With them all hugging each other, singing songs, going through absolute hell, and they loved every single minute of it.
So there was that part there is there's the sand dunes.
I was going to say, is this one of the famous sand dunes? Yeah,
yeah. It's the sand dunes in Singatoka. And you think you've seen sand dunes? They're sand dunes. They are unbelievably great sand dunes. They're huge and massive there. And part of our overall plan for us going into the World Cup was we started playing on week three. We had our first game, third week of the training camps. So we had to play. So what we did was we said, look, well, these games are important, but we're not going to... We called them rendezvous points for the week's training. So we knew where we were from that week, and then we could adjust the following week to make sure that we were on plan. Our journey, i.e. we therefore we got rendezvous points along this journey, but these were our warm-up games. And RV2 was the second weekend, was the Singatoka sand dunes. Now, everyone would say, when you go to Fiji, it's beautiful sunshine, it's red hot and it's lovely. It was cold, it was wet and it was raining. So I was in my element, it was brilliant. So we were good. We were good to go and we got up there. You go up onto the hills and we did the session from that. And it was almost like a rite of passage. We had another big, I can talk about, thing called Ubuntu, about I am because we are.
Yeah.
And the process behind that is that I can't be the best I'm being unless you're being the best you are, so forth. We all have an effect on each other. If I'm not being the best I am, you can't be the best you are. And that's where that sort of, it is a rite of passage and the guys will do it. And the last thing we did is, so we'd had races up that hill as teams, again, delve into competition. It was a big competition from the start. So we had races, everybody and the team would win and we'd add it up and we had a point scoring at the end of it. We had small-sided games upon there. We had all types of different things. And the last thing we did as a group, so we'd done team, built it, was come up the hill as a group, as a wanna, singing the prayer, which the boys love. And we sang the song and they came up there and it's almost like that
talking of prayers, because they love singing, don't they?
Lotu is good. It's excellent.
It's unbelievable. And I remember being at a sevens tournament and I was, unfortunately, the floor below them at 5:30 every morning.
Up and singing.
Every morning, up and singing, all on one floor. Right. So they'll all go into someone's room.
Yeah.
And it's phenomenal. But you think, after the fourth time of this happening, and it's 5:30 in the morning, you're like, guys, please find another room.
I get it. We shall overcome. You've overcome, lads. You've overcome.
Yeah,
you've done
it. We're ready for it.
But the culmination of that, you know, that hill walking and going up those dunes and things was the most successful World Cup that Fiji have ever been to and have ever done. And all of a sudden you saw these players playing 90 minutes of rugby instead of however many minutes they played before.
Oh, it stems back again to what time have we got? 9 weeks. Understanding the game. You've got to understand the game. You've got to train the game. That's a sort of mantra I try and run by, you know, handed down from another coach. But I think it runs it to a degree. Understand the game, what it entails, what's part and parcel of it. So we told the boys, we briefed them, and how far Fiji was behind Tier 1 nations. So, for example, an average Tier 1 nation ball in play game is around about, well, it was last year in the 23-24 season, with the Six Nations and the Rugby Championship, was about 35 minutes. Fiji, when they played them, they'd been around 33 minutes. Do you know what I mean? The highest is 45 minutes, I think, from 23.
46. Six Nations. 46.
It was more this year. 23, I think it was Ireland, France. But the same game this year was, again, it's about 46 minutes. So you see, you've got more of it. So if we're going to compete, we need to be able to do that. So our training was geared around ensuring we could do that. The work to rest ratios, i.e., how long are you working to your resting part? Actually, it's about 35, 40 seconds, the average game. And it's about 45 to 50 seconds rest period from that. But you do have really about 25% of the plays are over 60 seconds. So you've got to be able to do that, 60 seconds, 2 minutes plus. Again, let's gear our training around that. So, and that was a big step into the Fijian model that they weren't completely sure about, because they like to stop and they like to have a chat. And so you had to say,
they
not
like
anymore,
socialize.
Boys,
honestly,
let's keep going.
They love to socialise. And you're like, are we ready to kick off? Like, are we going? And they're... We are now.
And how do you deal with the fathletes? You know, that's how I like to describe myself now, a fathlete, a fat athlete. Obviously, these guys here. No,
I thought you were meaning like you were faffing.
Because the tight prop for Fiji was a big lad.
Because, you know,
and he could play.
Could he ever?
But he was 135 kilos?
He'd be 133.
Yeah.
He's gone up a little bit in Bayonne now. He's about 140 now.
Yeah.
But anyway.
He's had a big summer.
He had a big summer.
That's them French croissants, isn't it?
No, but the idea was with those is have a chat with them. Yeah. Have a chat with them. And gear it around what was going to... They are unbelievably for their team. Unbelievable for the team, mm-hmm. family, culture. That is part and parcel of them. Yeah. And they want to do it. And if you say, look, I want you to be starting, I want you to be up and playing there, and at the minute you're carrying probably a 5 kilo weight plate around the field with you. Do you want to do that? Mm. And I get that. Cool. So how do we work, as me and you, how are we going to make it so that we can get you better playing? And we just microdosed mini conditioning blocks into everything. And those boys were brilliant. So they'd do early morning sessions, they would do post rugby sessions in their weights, they would do watt bike and do things of that nature. And we just microdosed
it. You've got a coach that wants him at 130 kilos and you want to make him like 120 or something, because that's your job, to make people as strong and as light as they can. And that's what I mean. There's this thing
that's... And this is, again, how a good multidisciplinary team should work. Is it's not S&C and coaching, it should be together. And it's actually what's best for him to play rugby, because that's it. That's
but
everything.
Back in the day, Ben Moon had to eat double portions because he was shredded as a prop.
Have
and
you
needed
seen him
to,
now?
Mate, he's honestly, he is. I did a do at Barnsley rugby with him. He's tiny.
Yeah.
But Mooney, he used to eat it, because back in my day it was gainers and maintainers. We just split it in, that was what it was. Whereas now it's probably everybody has an individual program.
Yeah, so no, it's still quite, either a gainer, a maintainer, or you need to lose a bit.
There you go.
See, but I think the important bit is that you provide solutions.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than being told you need to lose some weight and you go, okay, and how am I doing that then?
And that probably goes back to your first point about how does a tier one nation as opposed to a tier two nation, there's an education piece, a huge education piece.
Yeah.
Because you're right, exactly that. You need to lose a bit, or you need to put muscle mass on. Well, how do you do that? Well, do you eat? What do you eat? What's good? What's that good? How does that look like? What's that? The portion control. We've had guys before who would be drinking... Here's a boring stat for you. If you look at it, so I think it's something like a latte, or three lattes from that, probably equivalent calorific-wise to a quarter pounder with cheese. So if you draw it with that side there, that's it. Now, if you add sugar to that, that then ramps it even higher.
Like tweets, this is a family show, so you're not allowed to, you're not allowed to swear and say things like portion control.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But so if you're saying so you may be able to help their food and actually provide them with the food, but then if the guys are away drinking coffee and you ask them how many, and you say, well, I've had three lattes, such and such, so forth, well, you've just probably eaten a quarter pounder, for example, and therefore it's identifying that. And then, do you have sugar with it? And Fijians,
they love
because of the nature
stuff.
Of it, they love sweet stuff, they love sugar. And so therefore, you say, I've had four sugars with a latte, like, okay. Oof. Well, then probably we might want to cue that down. And then... Not just saying it's because of performance, because it does, but it's also there's a health implication for it. You know what I mean? You could be pushing yourself towards diabetes, which you don't want. And it's that, for one guy, I was talking to him about it, you could see it was a light bulb moment.
Light bulb,
you just went, oh, wow, I don't want that. You say, well, look, this is the reason, because you're shock loading and shock dropping, and both are not the best for you to be able to do for your body.
So what's next then? Are you back to Fiji?
We've got some test matches coming up in the forthcoming future. We've got waiting for a new head coach to be announced.
Barry John Mather, isn't it? Or is he performance director?
No, he's performance. He's their head of high performance for Fiji Rugby. I'm not sure who it is as of yet.
Will they get one more year? Because Simon Raoulou's been a revolution.
Simon is absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. In the fact, he was the head of high performance at Fiji
I'm
Rugby.
I'm a massive fan from his time at Newport. Port Gwent, because he is in the mould of I'm in the mould of him as a proper right-handed sided power lock forward who's obviously very intelligent but what a guy.
Yeah, unbelievable. And he was a real cornerstone for Fiji rugby. He had a big step in starting up the Fijian Drua.
Yeah.
He'd done with things with the women's game, with the men's game, setting up academies. And so he was a real big driving force that's taken it forward. And to see him then step up and come to the head coach of the Flying Fijians and us to do well in that. And I think we were equal. I think we got quarterfinals, which was probably the same as in 2007. And I think we've done it once before. But it was an equal.
But it didn't feel like a shock. I think that was the thing. It did. 2007 is like, wow, Fiji here. This is exciting. Whereas this year it was like, actually, Fiji should be here and perhaps pushing on.
And no, what a game. In fact, I've watched Fiji play twice in Marseille. I watched him in 07. They played South Africa on the day England played Australia and beat Australia. The day after, Fiji played South Africa. It was supposed to be Wales-South Africa, but Fiji beat them there, which was great. Mm. And then I watched them this year play England in the same stadium, which had grown somewhat. But you know,
indeed, hadn't it? Just,
yeah.
Hadn't
it just... You know, how fantastic is that?
Oh, it was very... I think part of being an SNC coach, what I want to do is I want to help people improve and get better. And to see the work that those guys had actually put in through that time period and beforehand, and what they wanted to actually do. And they stepped out of their comfort zone in a lot of things, as well as the physical side, the mental side. It's not very often that the players come together and decide a whole raft of things themselves, which we asked them to do, and then came forward with a lot of their own values. But that sort of trickled on, that came onto the field as well. I mean, we had, I'm sure people would see, if they did or didn't, if the guys would run through two flags with Fijian flags on them. It was a gate, and we set it up from the very first, we went to an island called Tavuni for the very first week we were there, and we set up a load of our operating procedure, our values, what we were going to do. And one of them was, we called it Flick the Switch, and it's that gate, and you're coming through that gate, you're on. And it's on, and you're playing, and you're training, and you're doing exactly what you need to do. And if you weren't, and we didn't think you were, and you weren't doing it, we'd send them out through the gate, and you'd go off, and you could sort yourself out. When you're ready, come back through it. But it was a mental mind thing again to actually, there you go, we flick the switch, we're through the gate, we're on and playing. And we had the flags, they were the same flags we used in Tavuni, right. Same poles, and we just carried them all the way through with us, and to every game, every training session, everywhere we took them, they were part and parcel of it, and the guys came on the field every time through it.
That's fascinating. I want to talk about this all day.
Oh, God, but I could go for hours.
We might have to have you back for like another the monthly Dave Sylvester special.
Yeah, what you do in a game, because you go on to hydration then, don't you, during a game?
Oh, water boy, yep.
Head I don't carrier. Like to call it. I was in charge of hydration up in hospitality as well.
There you go, see. No, very important.
When you run the water, are you mic'd up to the coaches? You take your messages on?
Yep. And
that's why we have got law guidance on water carriers for people like you.
No, because
in what way?
No, because tweets would respect the referee and wouldn't gob off like that Welsh bloke did.
No, it's not about gobbing off.
Hang on, let's go in the bin. Moving on to our final section of the show.
That's why we have to have law guidance sent out for people like you sending messages on with water. What?
But only in the appropriate manner, in the appropriate time.
I can imagine you weren't like Neil Jenkins.
That's not the issue. That's not the issue.
It's amazing how many referees would like a drink at certain times.
Goodness gracious, yes. 100%. And if you've got some of that energy powder, I'll have that as well.
Jelly beans?
Anything.
The time's running on. We've got a bit to get through. This weekend in the Premiership, there were three glaring
oh God, here comes me. Everyone's looking at me now.
Over to you here.
Come three on, glaring moments involving officials. There was obviously at Harlequins, Ernst Herbs, is that his name? Ernst, he's South African, Juba. Let's call him Ernst Herbs, Juba.
What do you call it? Word salad.
Word salad. He was in the bin and he came back out after 7 minutes for Harlequins. We also had 19 minutes of extra time, Newcastle and Leicester.
That's not a referee thing, by the way, but what? Carry on.
Oh, well, it's an official, is it not?
It's a fourth official.
Who starts and finishes the game, then?
It's part of the PGMOT. It's one of your team who, unfortunately...
Coxie, the people are listening in for the controversy. Ian had a bit of a kick-off last week, and our listeners went through the roof, so this is what people want.
No, I'm not talking about that. The time of a game is not to do with...
That's an official, is it not?
Not really. That game was playing out the way that it was playing out. Like,
what, the 19
you're minutes? Binning, you're binning people within that 19 minutes. Right. So that's not necessarily like an official mistake, or that's not the match officials not paying attention necessarily. It's like that on-field match official team are doing what they need to be doing within that time frame. So I see what you're saying, but... That's just a moot point, really.
Do you know the key thing, and this is how I justify all these things, so let's go to the guy with 7 minutes, and everyone went, well, he came on and he made the first tackle, so he did that. Well, that's only because he was on the pitch. He was in that defensive spot. Had he not been on the pitch, somebody else would have been in that defensive spot, because it was in the middle of the field. It wasn't like they'd gone around the outside for an extra man.
But could there have been space there, though?
No. Oh, here we go.
No, and I know what you're saying.
Rules for his water
because it was right in the middle of the pitch. Had it been around the outside... Yeah. I think, and that I'd argue.
I'm gonna jump on. Rugby is perfectly imperfect, and for this to be the first time we've had a timing error in however long we've had fourth officials. Do you know what? It had 54 days off. There was players knocking on the ball. There was scrums falling over. The officials have made a few mistakes.
Can I just say that
and we move it on?
No. So can I just explain the whole number four thing? Because again, this is quite a faceless position, if you like, when you're a part of the match official team. Mm-hmm. So really, nobody's any idea of what the fourth official does. And I can probably say it categorically, it's the worst job on the day. Like, it's the worst job to be involved in for the admin. And people think, well, what's your fourth official there for? They replace someone that goes off injured. Well, it's not just that. So what we're working with at the moment is paper. So physical cards get filled out by match managers, mm-hmm. or your team's managers, with who they want to bring on and who they want to bring off, right? They hand a physical card to you as a number four, and then you've got to tell the match official what's going on. That also then happens, you've got to make a note of everything that happens. So you're keeping count.
First half is dead easy. Second half is like, ooh.
No, everything is woo, because I can guarantee to you now, it's like Newton's laws of how you work out the uncontested scrums and who comes off, who gets sacrificed, so on and so forth. Right. So you're keeping a note of every movement that happens on and off that pitch. So that comes from HIAs, that goes for all of the substitutions. Now, if we start going into the timed bits, so your HIAs, your yellow cards, your bloods and your blood HIAs. So I have a stopwatch on my phone that times each one of these things that happens. Now, I've got to also then work out which one is a running time, mm-hmm. and which one is a match time.
Have you ever been in a game where you've got it wrong and thought,
oh my God,
yeah. Finger in the air. That'll do.
Yeah, I did one at Exeter years and years and years ago, and I nearly stopped the game because I thought I put an extra person on. But right. Anyway, so let me finish this bit first, right? So if an HIA comes off, I've got to time that HIA, and it's real time. So that's the time that is actually happening in real life.
And you've got a blood bin. They've got 15 minutes.
Right. So that's 12 minutes. Then you've also got to liaise with the doctors as mm-hmm. well on those. And so to make sure that they get back on time. Mm-hmm. And you've got to keep that time strict. Because
I always used to say to the doctors when I was going for stitches, take your time. If I miss the game, my face is more important. Yeah, this is the moneymaker. It's the moneymaker.
I'm sure. Then you've got
good for radio.
Yeah. I know. Good story, Chris. Then you've also got, you've got to time the bloods, right? So that's 15 minutes. Yep. Then you have also, if you have the two at the same time, you've got to time the two of them. But what are the two of them combined? Well, now that's a new time, which is 17 minutes. Yeah. Then you've got to make sure that the HIA is completed within that 12 minutes and that they're ready to be back. No, but this is the thing. You can stay out of this as well. You can give me the snory boreys, but people need to understand that this is not as easy as you think it is.
Yeah, you're right. There's a lot of complicated, and it's one person. What is the solution?
Exactly. Right. I will come on to this because I've not finished.
There is some finger wagging going on.
There is. No, because I think people need to understand, because we've all gone really hard at match officials saying that these are big mess ups. Right,
he's had
to move microphones now because he wants to say something.
Just to be fair, I haven't, Sarah.
No, I'm not talking about you.
I'm just moving to Tweet's microphone because I'm scared sat next to Sarah.
He's safer over here.
It is.
Go on then, Coxie, carry on.
So there's so much. So those are just the timings. So I've got a separate stopwatch for each of those. Then someone gets binned. So I've got to work out who has been binned, where they are, and when I start the watch, it's when it happens. That then goes off the clocks in the stadium. So that's different again.
Of course, because the game has stopped.
So it goes start, stop, start, right. Stop.
So have you got to stop a load of stopwatches all at once?
Correct. Because I've got real-time HIA stuff
going on.
Coxie,
what's the solution?
I will get to that if you let me finish, right? That there is just normal practice. Yeah. Then you add in when people go off for HIAs, bins that are front row players, that you run out of substitutions and you've got to work out who can come on the pitch after that. You've then got to work out why players have come off, whether they can be replaced or whether they can be, like for an HIA, you can bring someone back on in that position that has already been substituted. but then you can't do that for an injury, so you've got to work out what they've come off. Then you'll have a team manager say, that's not an injury, that's an HIA, or vice versa. Mm-hmm. Then you've got to work out what category all this sits in, so people can or cannot come off the pitch. So that's just that tiny little bit. Mm-hmm. Then you've got to work out who's going to be sacrificed if you go down the uncontested scrums, okay, and right, work out...
Okay, I've got it. There's a myriad of challenges.
Exactly.
So how are we going to fix this, Sarah?
Right, there is a way of fixing this, quite simply. There is technology out there, mm-hmm, that can do all of this and take the human error out of it, right, but it's not there.
Okay.
So we won't go into the details of all of that.
We just did.
But we didn't, because that's not the detail.
Okay.
But that's not, it's not there. It's not in place at the moment.
What would be the most important part? So would that yellow card, because that could then have an effect. I know the injuries are important. Do you know what I mean? And I know you've got to have a process 100%, in place.
100%.
But if you have the yellow card, could have the most dire effects. Do you know what I mean? So I get it, he's got a time frame to come back on, but if it's slightly under and over, would that be perceived if he's rightly or wrong?
Any of that could be, to be quite honest. You could be bringing HIAs back on at the wrong times, which could also have different effects. The yellow card side of stuff, yeah. And then, again, you're looking at the sacrifice of people when people have been binned in the front row side of stuff. Those are really important, but that's the hardest bit to work out. So you can't take this human error out of it unless you take the humans out of it. Mm-hmm. And that's where the technology side of stuff comes in. Now, there is a solution, but it's not there at the moment for lots of different reasons. But there has to be a way of relieving this pressure off people that you're telling me in 2024 we're still dealing with cards, like physical cards.
What you're saying is they should almost have some sort of app that's synced to the
and it all
there's
links
a SIM bin, it goes boop on the cloud.
Couldn't there be the issue with that though, that actually we've seen it before on Max, on where if it's electronic, how would you change it quickly? Because we've had it before where this guy's going on for him, and then literally hack card, stop bang, and it's, you know what I mean, that you then create time.
GPS.
No,
so
I've been in that one where you walk, the second row goes down injured and you think you're going on there, we'll put the tight end prop on
you. That was when you played at Biarritz.
12,000 people standing there.
So that was difficult. That sounds even more stressful, what you're going through there, than when I had to hand out the party bags at a five-year-old's birthday party at Greeley. Oh my God, this thing's going off everywhere.
Yeah, okay.
What? It is like that. So the point is...
There's a technological solution that needs to be found to VAR it.
Correct, but that costs money.
Yeah.
And so that's what. But I do believe that we have to enter into a part of sort of where the game is, where you've got to take this responsibility off people and just allow the technology to produce the answers, so that people don't have to work it out. Because honestly, some of this stuff is like working out Newton's law.
I got it. And you've got a man in the bin. You've got a front row replacement that's come off for you've got a red card, so you need to change your front row, but there's no one left, and then
you've got to count them
out. And
then
you've got HIA, and then you've got
to
make sure. Yeah,
so you go to that Newcastle Leicester game, and you've got to count how many are on the pitch, because sometimes people forget that something's happened and they need to go off.
and you're dealing with team managers, aren't you? So
you've got the team manager.
Tony Walker at you.
No. To be fair, the team managers are pretty good, but if you were to ask team managers really to dig deep into the uncontested scrums and man off law, they probably couldn't tell you what the answer is. Right. And this is the thing, is that we put a lot of responsibility on sort of what these number fours are doing, but I guarantee that there was a lot going on at that time that bin had gone awry somewhere. So I think it's about, I know you guys take the mick out of me, but it's about understanding that these roles are not simple, and they're not as easy as just getting a timing wrong.
Oh no.
And that's the thing, is it's highlighting that as well, that sometimes there are things that are going to go awry.
Even playing down the levels, and this, I don't mean to be demeaning in any way, when I've run as a touch judge, when you're on the bench, like you'll run the line, suddenly you think it's dead easy, but you've actually got to watch a fair bit and do it. I get it. Again, there's a lot more involved in the roles. And this is going up to the elite tier, where there's so much more going on.
There's the whole environment. So
final point, because you mentioned you wanted to go on about the law variations, and I'm gonna
oh God, here he goes. We haven't got time to go through all those time, law variations.
Well then let's leave the last word on that with Rob Baxter. There's no sport in the world that has tried to grow by confusing supporters every 12 months. The game was fine 3 to 4 years ago, and we didn't need to change it then. 90% of the law changes are to redo things created by other law changes. It's madness.
a dinosaur reading out something said by someone because the laws affect the way he's trained his team. But apart from that, good point.
What a big statement from you.
Well, I would contend, Rob, because you two both kicked off yesterday.
No, Chris is the dinosaur, not Rob Baxter.
No, but you kicked off last week, I said yesterday, because I listened to the pod.
Oh, yeah, he really goes about his scrums.
About held up over the line and not having a scrum. And I think
the goal line dropout is brilliant. Get the ball back in play, get people going again.
But a scrum is the ball in play. So the only issue we've got is the time it takes to set a scrum.
No, I don't agree with that.
You messed
at all.
Up. You didn't score. Let's go again.
I would contend you put massive pressure on. They couldn't stop you other than holding you off the floor, so you get another go at them.
Oh, I didn't know Diplodocus could talk.
Well, you can't just go out of homonymy, and you've got to give something other than just to call me a dinosaur.
Right, what's your opinion on this? So you're attacking team, you go over the try line, you get held up. So the defence has done what they should have done. And it used to be a sequence of 5 metres.
Well, no, the defence should have repelled you, not allowed you over the line and held you up.
Stop talking over people. So you then get the goal line dropout. It used to be that you'd get a scrum and you could go again.
Yeah.
What are your opinions?
My take on it is that we have to... I've seen rugby played in different countries. I think what we have to do is we have to make sure it's an entertainment as well as a sport. And that's part and parcel of it. So a lot of what we have to do is potentially speed the game up. And I would suggest, I think, that it's almost a case of if a scrum is a minute, then... If a scrum was 2 minutes to set, they would take 2 minutes. If it's a minute to set, they take a minute. If it was 30 seconds, it would take 30 seconds to set. It's just purely the time frame. And if they're the ones that are taking elongating the process, then we may need to speed that up in some way, shape or form. So the shot clocks need to be well refereed and pushed forward. I think that's a great part from that.
Another responsibility for the referee. Now you can time that.
And the reason you can't speed up a scrum is because of health and safety. You know, it's just a welfare of your players.
But yes, there is. There's that in the point, but it's actually they go through a process that takes X amount of time.
Yes.
Now, if we were allowed 2 minutes, it would be a 2 minute process. Yeah, okay. If it's a minute process,
you saw it on the weekend on Friday night. No, you're not allowed to talk over people. You've been told this. you saw it on Friday night with kickers taking their allotted time.
Luke Pearce had a go at Finn Smith, didn't he?
Yeah, I get the point that is trying to be made there. Look, you're standing there not doing anything. Like,
it's
surely
like
seven, wants,
it's like sevens, isn't it? When
they used to do that.
Yeah.
So they take their time now. Mm. But if you didn't have that shot clock in place, you probably maybe say that 90% of the time he'd just put the ball on the tee and kick it over. But then you get the other side of it when Farrell got turned over in the World Cup because he took too long. So I get it, but yeah, I think you're right.
How do you speed the game up? As a question to you guys, how would you speed the game up if you could change one?
This will be another hour.
If you could change one law, one rule, or just something, how would you speed the game up?
I'd increase the fatigue index. I'd drop the number of subs.
Quite a lot.
But it's always been a thing because we've now, you'll know this, you condition some players to be fit for about 60 minutes, the big boys, because you know they're going to have somebody come on and replace them. And I think that the scrum takes a while to set because they're so big and there's so much force. We have to be absolutely right when they engage. Whereas you look at rugby from 30 years ago when there were no subs, they grabbed hold of each other and just piled in and it was a means to restart the game. But there was a competition. You had to hook the ball and you had to push. It might not be as spectacular for people to see, and if we're trying to grow the game, which we always put in parentheses, I quite like the purity of rugby, and I am a dinosaur in this one. I'd rather have 15 people going at it, and if you think, well, I want to have a 140-kilo tight head prop, but I know for the last half hour he's a passenger, so he's got to do his work in the first 40 minutes to get us ahead, and another team go, well, we're going to carry a fast prop who's going to get absolutely bojaxed for the first 50 minutes, but we know in the last half hour he's going to chase him down, and you create this. Then there's a coaching challenge. What are you going to go for? It will certainly diminish the size. We're not going to have as massive muscle-bound athletes because they won't be able to go for 80 minutes, certainly in the forwards. Or if they do, there's going to be space and you're going to have an entertaining game. So for me, I think reduce the subs.
I can see the reduce the sub thing.
So we have 18 in all local rugby.
Or have interchange.
So there's three subs.
No, you don't want interchanges.
Okay.
Something else for the ref to do.
That's another thing from me. I'm not having interchanges. No, that actually might reduce the paperwork because you wouldn't need the cards for it.
Rugby league's had 100 years of professionalism, so they've sort of got things down because they know exactly how their game is.
Very rarely
do they change their laws like
yeah,
we
but
do.
You've, yeah, but you've
this
got...
is our game. But interchange works there. Four players, use them 12 times.
Yeah, but you're saying about the fatigue index, then you're taking someone off that can have a rest, come on, back on.
Okay. What's the rule in France? Because their subs rule is slightly different.
They've got
rolling.
Yeah, and they
have an interchange.
Yeah, so you see people go off. He's gassed, as a 10-minute rest comes back on again. I think
it's another
work
thing for another show.
For you.
Honestly, Tweety, this has been brilliant. It's been the longest we've been on air. I'm getting told off by Brad every second.
Like,
we have to have you back. Ian's going to come on with Statman when we finish. But Coxie, any more business from you?
No.
Ian, any other business from you?
No.
Tweets, any other business from you?
No, all good for me. And just say thank you very much for having me on.
It's been absolutely brilliant.
Bulla Vanaka to you all.
Oh, Bulla Vanaka, of course, Bulla Bulla.
Bulla.
The final word goes to Ian, because we like Ian's final words and summation. 2 multiplied by 10 is at the end of two Locks and Cocks.
Two Locks and a Cocks.
From Devon's Radio X. With Exeter Chiefs.
The next match against Bath is on Saturday the 20th of April. Book your tickets today at tickethub.exeterchiefs.co.uk.
Hey Dave, great to see you this week after a not-so-successful trip to Sale, which went kind of against the grain of your stats we told last week, but I'm sure it wasn't a great bus trip back.
Well, as you know, I always like to be positive about these things. So, I mean, it's great that Chiefs are able to hold on for a 48-41 aggregate win over Sale this season. The weird thing is, though, that 41 points that Chiefs conceded, that's the only odd score they've conceded in the Premiership this year. But it's also the same score that Bath got. So that's happened twice, but it's the only odd score they've conceded. So you'd think that if it was going to be a common odd score, it'd be 17 or something achievable rather than 41. But there you go. That's the weird season we've got. Only Bristol have won both Premiership games since the restart. So maybe, you know, we shouldn't get too hard on ourselves. And Chiefs' last Easter Sunday game was back in 2005. And I haven't checked to see whether Chris Bentley was in the side or not, but the results suggest he could have been. They lost 68-15 at Bristol.
I was so definitely there, yeah.
So if if anything, that's a better result than the last Easter Sunday game. The one stat I do have about the game itself was Chiefs only conceded one more penalty than the previous week against Newcastle. But ultimately, 14 and 13 the week before will probably still be too many, I would imagine, if you asked Rob Baxter. So looking forward now towards the Bath game this weekend. And I've got to be positive about it again, but I think there's a lot of evidence to suggest we can be a bit more optimistic. Just one defeat in the last 18 at home in Europe. That was to Leinster in the quarterfinals in 2021. In that time, they've beaten Saints, Toulouse, Lyon, Montpellier and Stormers in home knockout games. They also beat Munster in a home knockout leg, but lost the second leg. And it's just that defeat to Leinster that stands out, really. And in fact, actually, their record in knockout matches at Sandy Park is almost perfect. In the last 10 years or so, they've played 19 knockout matches at Sandy Park and progressed in 17 of them.
That's a hell of a stat, isn't it? I mean, and that does, after having taken a bashing this weekend, that really does leave us heads held high, hopefully, for Fortress Sandy Park and this competition, which we've done well at.
Yeah, and obviously Europe, you do get to play some different sides, so it's nice. We'll have to look to see where Bath is on the map of Europe, because we don't see them very often. But their last win at Sandy Park, Bath, was back in October 2016. With the last-minute Rokandanguni try, which Chiefs then went unbeaten for the rest of the season and won the league. So you know, it won't be all bad. Similarly, Bath have only won 7 times against Exeter in the last 10 years. 5 of those, weirdly, are with prime number scores, which is a baffling stat. And that's in 27 meetings in the last 10 years. So that's... that's a really good record for Exeter. Exeter did start, actually, against Bath, as we probably talked about in the past, with 10 defeats and a draw in their first 11 meetings after promotion.
I remember well. They were our bogey team for a long time.
Yeah, they were a big bogey team, but then it's now 19 wins from the last 24 against Bath.
Okay, good.
So, but we have lost our last 3. So, you know... I think, but they've all been away. So I think there's a lot to be positive about this weekend. And I think there's a really good chance that Chiefs can progress. So let's keep fingers crossed, really.
And we're knockout rugby, so we don't know what the scores are going to be, but you think that the posts will keep ticking over. It's not going to be a big scoring game? Or do you think, like last week's game versus Harlequins Bath, where there were 86 points, was it? 76 points.
Yeah, it could be anywhere between those two, couldn't it, really? I think it depends which Exeter turn up and which Bath turn up, really. I think if you get the first half Bath from this weekend and the Exeter we've seen earlier in the season, it could be quite comfortable, couldn't it? And if it's second half Bath and this last week's Exeter turn up, then we're probably in a bit of trouble. But hopefully it'll be a good game and Chiefs can get the job done.
Awesome. So let's bring the blue and we will catch up next week and then we can talk about where we're going next in Europe.
Yeah, hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Brilliant. Thanks, Dave.
Two locks and a cox.
From Devon's Radio X with Exeter Chiefs.
The next match against Bath is on Saturday the 20th of April. Book your tickets today at tickethub.exeterchiefs.co.uk.